Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. We are rooted in community support and engagement. Thank you for helping us stay on air.
Hi, I'm Andre Goulet. You're listening to Harbinger Showcase. Harbinger Showcase is a weekly podcast syndicated to community and campus radio, including CITR, CJSR, and Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Victoria's CFUV, CHLY in Nanaimo, CIVL in Abbotsford, CJSR in Edmonton, CKUW and CJUM in Winnipeg, at Met Radio in Toronto, at Radio Laurier in Waterloo, at CFMU in Hamilton, at CJM in Windsor, at Montreal's CKUT, at Local FM in St. John, New Brunswick, and at CJBU in Sydney, Nova Scotia. And featuring highlights from the country's favorite progressive podcast community. Since launching in 2020, the Harbinger Media Network has become Canada's number one listener-supported nonprofit podcast network, featuring 83 shows exploring politics, society, and culture from a progressive perspective. Find out more about the community, subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and support us at harbingermedianetwork.com. On this episode, we're proud to present a live recording from this summer's Sony Porylpopolo Music Festival live broadcast in collaboration with CKUT 90.3 FM and held at Casa del Popolo on June 21st in Montreal. But first, this September, the CEOs of BlackRock, Blackstone, and others from the Global 1% are coming to Toronto at the invitation of Prime Minister Mark Carney. It's billed as an investment summit the federal government's hosting, but what they're actually hosting is a privatization summit looking to privatize airports, water systems, pipelines, toll roads, ports, AI data centers, housing, and mineral deposits from stolen indigenous lands. But while CEOs and foreign investors are gathering at a luxury hotel downtown to buy up what remains of our shared public infrastructure, others are planning the fight back at the Many Versus the Money Counter Summit happening at OCAD University. Convened by the Council of Canadians, Eighth Fire Rising, and World Beyond War, the Counter Summit will open on Saturday, September 12th, featuring keynote speakers journalist Naomi Klein and U.S. scholar and activist Kianga Yamada Taylor and musical guest folk singer Carsey Blanton at 5 p.m. Then on Sunday, September 13th, the Counter Summit continues with an all-day teach-in, bringing together organizers, researchers, and frontline activists from movements including labor, indigenous, tenants' rights, climate, anti-war, migrant rights, Palestine solidarity, and others. Panels will look at the role these corporate elites play in the worsening crises working-class people face and how the many can organize to defeat the money. For more information, visit manyversusmoneysummit.ca. This is a multi-day movement-building event not to be missed. Space is limited. Register now at manyversusmoneysummit.ca. And in this episode, join us for conversations with Free City Radio host Stefan Christoph, Local 514's Calden Ditsempa, the Rover Managing Editor Savannah Stewart, the Breach Show Executive Producer Katia Lowe Innes, Federal NDP President Niall Ricardo, the CKUT News Collective, and Palestinian Youth Movement. Now, here's the show.
Hello, and welcome back to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is a very special broadcast from Casa del Popolo on Saint-Laurent for the Sony Porylpopolo Festival. It is the 26th edition this year, and we are right in the middle of it. I'm here with Andre Goulet from Harbinger. Would you like to say hi?
I'm so happy to be here. Harbinger and Unrig.ca are collaborating with the festival this year to bring in journalists, to bring in broadcasters, and to talk about the music that's happening, but also to talk about the work that the independent journalism space does in Montreal and across the country. So we're really stoked to be here. We have a hot lineup. It's no surprise to any of us at this table, but we have coming up CUTV, Canadian Dimension, We have The Breach, Katielo Innes from The Breach. We have Savannah Stewart from The Rover. Those will come up later. And at the end of the broadcast, sometime after 3 p.m., we'll have a representative from Palestinian Youth Movement and NDP Federal NDP President Niall Ricardo. But first, we're really stoked to kick it off with our buddy, our homie. He's a broadcaster, musician, profoundly wonderful wheat poster in my neighborhood of Villeray. I walk around and there's always amazing Palestinian solidarity posters and other awesome stuff. So I really appreciate that. Stefan Christoph, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks.
Yeah, and so I'm Nelson Graves, and I'm also here with Jenna, who we are both members of CQT's Volunteer News Collective, and we're here today to chat a bit with all of our different guests who are coming in. So Stefan has right in front of us a lot of really cool things. Could you tell us a bit about all of these things that you've brought with you?
Oh, thanks so much. I mean, it's wonderful to be here during Suoni Pari Popolo, or Sounds of the People Festival. I just wanted to thank you, Andre, for the note on the street art, and also wheat pasting. So it's basically flour and water substance with boiling water, and you mix it with a whisk, and then you can get up, you know, social movement posters or, you know, material where you want to pass a message on the street, maybe one that's marginalized in the mainstream media. So that's a practice that I participate in with many others in the city. Thanks for your question. All of the material in front of me are both cassette tapes and zines. So it's also the material of social movements, mm-hmm. In the sense, or material of the sort of intersection of culture and activism. The zines sort of carry some of those voices in a sense. So zines meaning micro publications. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily a book format, but the format of you know, creating a paper publication where you can have space where people talk about these ideas of how do social movements and the arts intersect, mm-hmm. for example. So one of the zines that I have in front of me is based on interviews that will air on CKUT, and you know, CKUT, of course, a longstanding, awesome radio station, and here in the city. So it's called Voices of Cultural Workers in Mexico City, Transbordar, so in transit, and it's five cultural organizers in Mexico City who really look at some of the important intersections of social and political debate today in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. So questions around gentrification, mm-hmm. cost of living, and you know, collaborations between artists and social movements. So, for example, the right to housing movements, the feminist movements, with an S, many different incarnations of the feminist movement in Mexico. There's, of course, you know, movements that bring attention to those displaced in Mexico, particularly in the south, through quote-unquote national development projects. So these things really do come a head in independent cultural spaces in Mexico City, mm-hmm. like they do here in Montreal in a space like Casa del Popolo, mm-hmm. or on a community radio station like CKUT, where people sort of come together and talk about these points of both these points of contention, but also these points of when people come together to act together to address questions like, for example, gentrification in Mexico City. So because so many people are going right now to Mexico City, and there's an exchange between this festival, Suoni Pari Popolo, and artists from Mexico City who've come here, and artists from Montreal went down to Mexico City as part of this festival, I wanted to create a booklet where people would get a chance to engage directly and hear from the voices of five cultural workers in the city who are involved in, you know, the mess. I don't mean in a bad way, but like sort of the texture, the challenges of operating in that independent cultural space in Mexico City today. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was important to sort of work with these cultural workers to make a booklet publication so that when people, if they do travel to Mexico City, can maybe have a sense of some Mexican cultural worker voices. And so I've worked with this group of cultural workers over the last 6-7 months to like transcribe and work through these transcripts and create this booklet publication that will launch this Friday at the Suwannee Parc Popolo Festival. It's called, as I said before, Trans Baudard. So sort of like in transit or in transition. So meaning like motion or movement. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's coming out on Friday.
Yeah. So as you'd mentioned, like there, it's important to think about what's happening in Mexico also in relation to what's happening here in Montreal. Yeah. Are there maybe some specific moments in these interviews where you're like, this is something that's happening in Montreal? Like you saw a clear resonance.
Yeah. Well, thanks for bringing that up. There are extreme differences.
Yeah, you know, of course.
Mexico City's a huge place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Montreal is a significant city, but the scale is just very different. Mm-hmm. However, one thread that I think really connects some of the discussions I had with cultural workers in Mexico City and that I see a lot of people speaking about in this space where we are right now and at this festival is the question of housing justice and gentrification.
Yeah, and this is something you've been working on for a while as well. Yeah, also with other zines and other projects.
Yeah, and sort of without pushing it, to be totally honest with you, it's pretty prominent in two of the interviews that I did, mm-hmm. and they brought it up. So one of them is with this cultural organizer in Mexico City, Jose Ortega. He's one of the founders of a space there called 316 Centro. Centro, it's called that because it's right in the middle of the old sort of industrial, not totally industrial, but sort of like warehouse district close to downtown. Mm. And a lot of those old buildings are places where migrants, like internal migrants from within Mexico, but also migrants from other parts of Latin America or even the Caribbean, who are passing through Mexico or working in Mexico City, live in those buildings now. And with the World Cup, and Jose talks about this in the interview, with the World Cup and the sort of increasing neo-colonization of Mexico City, with a lot of Americans moving to Mexico City who don't necessarily engage with the local texture or struggles there, but mm-hmm. maybe work a tech job, and are just basically there because their quote-unquote cost of living is a much lower. Mm-hmm. But they're in that space without actually engaging with the struggles and the daily sort of questions that people from Mexico City are facing, or migrants in Mexico City. So I think people here who are hearing this might not sort of conceptualize Mexico City in this way, but it's important. It's one of the hubs of Spanish-speaking Americas, right? Obviously, in terms of its size. But it's also a hub of migration. So you have a lot of people coming from other parts of Latin America to work and live in Mexico City. And so Jose talks about that in this particular district where they've made an alternative cultural venue called 316 Centro. Mm-hmm. And it's in one of these buildings, and I've been there. So you have people kind of like living in sort of informal housing, but it's become a really important space. But they actually recently got evicted because of the World Cup, actually, because big parts of that particular region of downtown. So we're talking about rights like Centro, so like right in the old part of the old city. That part is facing gentrification for the first time. And until very recently, that was a part of the city where, like, even friends of mine from Mexico City were like, oh, you're playing in that area? Oh, watch out, or et cetera. I did not have that experience myself, but I also recognize that some people have had that experience. But I'm just saying that to share that, you know, it definitely was not a gentrified area compared to other areas like Roma Condesa.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Or other...
yeah.
So these interviews sort of get into that texture of what life in the city is like and very contemporary of the moment discussions. So that's one example from this booklet publication.
Yeah, and especially like thinking of what's happening in Montreal. I mean, I've worked in my own projects on the loss of cultural spaces here in the city.
Exactly.
With the weaponization of noise complaints for different groups to try to come in and take over pieces of property that they want for speculative reasons or whatever. So, you know, it is important to talk about these residences, and especially with the World Cup. I mean, that's something that's happening across North America, here in Canada, in the U.S., and
Also, just a very small detail. I won't go on about this particularly. I have not spent a lot of time looking at the World Cup dynamics, but the decision to bring the World Cup to Mexico City was taken by the previous, mafia right government in Mexico. Not to say that the current government has not hosted it. They are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of gentrification's happening due to the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Just as a note. But, you know, it's this sort of strange moment where you have a center-left government hosting the World Cup. And I would bring up what happened in Brazil about 15 years ago, a little bit more, when the government of the Workers' Party under Dilma Rousseff hosted the World Cup. Mm. And all the sort of contradictions that came out during that time. These international sporting events are something, particularly football, is something that people in the Americas love. But it's being corporatized and occupied in a sense. So I think that if we think about FIFA, it's really the occupation of the sport, like in terms of like a economic, political, colonial occupation of football.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, in the sense that they're occupying what people love. Mm-hmm. And so I think people can often scoff at people are going crazy for the World Cup. But it's less about FIFA. It's more about the sort of collectivity of the sport and the sort of pride of national cultures. But I think it's important for us to discern between what FIFA is and what football is, because mm-hmm. FIFA is occupying people's love of the sport at a grassroots level and commodifying
they're taking
it and
profiting
off of that.
And turning it into, trying to turn it into profit and in the process displacing a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, right. It's looking like we're going to move on to our next guest. But thank you so much, Stefan, for being on today.
Yeah.
And again, for our listeners, we are live from Casa del Popolo on Saint Laurent today on this kind of strange rainy day. We are right in the middle of the 20 Pearl Popolo Festival, and we are doing a series of sort of interviews, chats with different activists and journalists and people from around Montreal. As part of the festival, and thank you so much for tuning in. And next we have some people from CUTV here, and Andre's going to come back in. And
it's just worth saying that CUTV, which is Canada's oldest community broadcaster out of Concordia, they recently digitized their archives, and they have a huge catalog now which is available for people to check out online, which is amazing. So we're going to pass off to Tatiana and Calden. Calden's also going to be talking about Canadian Dimension and an archive project they have, so we'll pass it over to them.
Thank you so much, Andre.
Hello.
Okay.
Yeah, and thank you so much for coming. Would you quickly both like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah, my name is Tatiana. I work for CUTV as their video archive coordinator, which I've been doing for the past year. That's me.
My name is Calden Dadzipa. I am the video host of the show Local 5 and 4, which is produced at CUTV. I'm also here to speak on my capacity as an editor, a member of the editorial board at Canadian Dimension, and the different things I'm a part of across these two publications.
Nice. And again, I'm Nelson. I'm also here with Jenna.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
And so we're super happy to have you both here. First, I guess we could go into this archive bit that Andre was talking about. And Tatiana, you could speak a bit about this.
Yes. So, I think as Andre mentioned, oldest campus-based broadcaster in Canada, CUTV. It's been going on since, I think the date is a bit ambiguous, it's 66 or 69. As the station has been going, as students have been producing journalism and, films and, all the stuff that they were putting on either, community TV or just playing on, closed-circuit TVs at Concordia, they've been kind of keeping all the tapes that they've produced, and sometimes the tapes that they just broadcast from other sources as well, in kind of these video libraries. And over the years, they got transferred to the university archives. all on these magnetic tapes. And we've kind of been able over the last year to pick up a project to scan these tapes and put them into digital formats so people can watch them on places mm-hmm. like YouTube. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really like awesome and interesting process to just like literally watch all these videos and try to describe what's in them, who's in them, what was going on, the context around them. Mm-hmm.
So what exactly was your role in the project?
So I'm the kind of coordinator. Like I'm an archivist by training, and I was asked to organize the whole thing and like figure out the processes for it. So it's kind of like a management role, and I have there's Layla Salazar, who is the assistant on the project, mm-hmm. as well as Matthew Halpenny, who's like the assistant after Layla, basically.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of like do a lot of the admin stuff, but I'm also like sitting watching videos.
Mm-hmm. So you're going through and trying to. We said like trying to figure out what exactly, like who was there and like what's happening.
Yeah, we're trying to make them like searchable and accessible. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to describe them, like literally like write descriptions of what the videos are in the hopes of making them accessible to researchers. We have a fair amount of content about like activism and protest in the city and like student mm-hmm. movements.
Yeah. And especially with Concordia's long history in that, like it's extremely important to have that ready and searchable. And at CKUT, like we've had a few people ask to access our archives and things like that. And so people are, always looking for stuff from a period. Mm-hmm. And so to have that there is very, very important.
Yeah. And it's exciting that it's video, because I feel like, the experience of, like, browsing an archive, you're sometimes going through, like, troves and troves of paper and, like, looking mm-hmm. for maybe, like, a document that fits your research needs. Mm-hmm. But with video, like, it's really, like, the voices and the people and, like, the colors really come alive. And there's an aspect of it that's just, like, fun to see a Montreal from a few decades ago,
It's like a little time capsule.
Totally.
Yeah. Do you have any pieces that come to mind that you're like, this is really cool and that people need to check out?
I feel like the stuff that really stands out to me are these shows from the 80s that were like these elaborate studio sets where I think CUTV was collaborating with CFCF Montreal, which I believe then transitioned to CTV Montreal as like the community news station. And they would have these like really kind of like beautiful elaborate sets of just like two people sitting and talking, and there was like Art Beat, which was talking about like arts and culture in the city, so they would like chat about what was going on in the city and then have these segments where they go to like to the art gallery or go to like to a performance of some kind. So those are super cool. And then like in the same vein, there's Montreal Profiles, where they just interview like interesting Montrealers. Where they just interview like interesting Montrealers, like mm-hmm. sommeliers working for the SAC or something
sick.
Like that. So that kind of journalism is, I feel like, so different than kind of what CUTV does now. But like it's funny to see like the different interests that people mm-hmm. evolve over time. Mm-hmm. And I really like the stuff about like local arts and culture as well. Like there's a show called What's Up Montreal from the early 90s, I believe, and they just interview like local musicians and show like sets of local artists. A lot to see if you're interested in like music and arts and culture and like just how like independent journalism has grown over time.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I guess for any researchers or anyone out there, how might they access the archives if they would like to? Yeah.
Thank you so much for asking. If you go to cutvmontreal.org, there is a CUTV Archives page.
Okay.
You can also search CUTV Archives on YouTube.
Okay.
I think those are the most accessible access points, and it's also available through the Concordia Records Management and Archives digital catalog.
Okay.
But through our website is probably the easiest way to find it.
Oh, that's so, I really want to like poke through those and see what all is there, because that's always like so fascinating to see. I'm going to pivot over to Kaldin, who is also here, another person from CUTV. Could you tell us a bit about your role there, also with Montreal 514 and your other projects as well?
Absolutely. So I think I want a quick comment about the archive. I think something, looking back at the work that some of these journalists have done in the past, and I think what marks me the most is the size of some of these sets.
Mm.
And like these are like sets with like pretty complicated lighting setups. It kind of made me look at my set that I have at CUTV on Local 504, and I'm like, man, I need to step this up. This is if they're doing this back in the 80s, why am I not doing this now? So coming to the now, at CUTV, I host a show called Local 514, We pitch it as news from Montreal. Montreal news from a radically different perspective. I do a lot of interviews with activists, kind of continuing on this tradition at CUTV that CUTV has done so long, in this kind of on-field reporting, interviews with activists, and sort of being providing this kind of really up-close and personal reporting on movements and the different activities that movements, labor movements, student movements, social movements are doing in Montreal. Most recently, we had Chris Curtis on, who's editor-in-chief at The Rover.
Yeah,
Chris
later we'll have Savannah Stewart from The Rover on, so that'll be...
We're one big family at Unrigged.
One big family.
Uncle Chris. Yeah, so last week Uncle Chris came on. He's been a journalist. I mean, if people aren't familiar, he's like a veteran journalist in Montreal. He's like, I think it's an incredible experience to talk to him, to see the perspective he has on the city. Mm-hmm. There's lots I learned. So I had him on just to talk about the recent news coming out of Montreal North. Station 39, of course, with the leaks of what's potentially in this final report about this an enormous amount of just like disgusting vitriolic racism being committed by these officers. You know, it's not like a light subject. And Chris was someone I could have on to kind of parse through what's going on, talk about the ramifications of all this. You know, there's lots of interesting details that I think Chris was a great guest to have on. Mm-hmm. In the past, we've covered other things like we're very much plugged into Palestine organizing in Montreal, pro-Palestinian organizing, the kind of ways that they're shifting from what was primarily, like, I would say the flashpoint was, you know, at the encampment, you know, and now it's kind of moving on to applying pressure towards places like General Dynamics, the General Dynamics plant out in Salaberry de Valleyfield. We release every week on Thursdays. We release the interview, the talk show on Thursdays in the morning. But then, of course, we still have our video reports, our field reporting on the ground at protests, talking to people who are, you know, like right at the forefront of the struggle, mm-hmm. whatever struggle it might be.
And like, what sort of challenges do you have as in video reporting versus something like, say, audio or print reporting?
I gotta look good.
You gotta look good. You're always.
I can't show up in PJs. People will notice. I think one of the difficulties of video reporting is like in my career, I've done some like article writing, some feature journalism, and I think it's a little easier to get comments from people because it's just they don't actually have to present themselves. You know, I just need to get like a quote from them that I can use. But for video journalism, you know, especially because like we film in studio, so it's like people have to be sort of ready to like get on camera and then for a mostly uninterrupted 30 minutes make their pitch, you know, talk about what it is. And it does take a certain amount of confidence from the guests I bring on. But everyone I've brought on has been like up for the challenge, you know. It's I think the hurdle of that is always like a little bit at the start when I have to be like, by the way, this is video, it's going to be recorded and we're going to be broadcasting you. And there's some people who have requested that there's no video element because of anonymity concerns, because of concerns for their safety. You know, some guests I've interviewed are involved with like shedding light on violent right-wing groups in Montreal, across Canada, and they're usually there's a higher risk of harm on them, right? So that's when we will shift to maybe some different version of a audio sort of interview. But for the most part, yeah, I'd say that's the first thing that comes to mind for a challenge for video reporting.
And we're having an incredible time this afternoon.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jack Solar and CKUT for organizing this. Nelson Graves taking a quick pause. This is Andre Goulet, Harbinger Director and Unrigged Community Coordinator. Jenna is here too.
Yes, I'm still here.
Jenna, we're having a good time. And thanks to Stefan Christoph for joining us. And thanks to Calden and Tatiana from CUTV/Canadian Dimension for joining us. And our next slate of guests, we have a combination. Katia Lo Innes from The Breach. Katia, welcome.
Hi, Andre. Thank you for having me. And lovely to meet you, Jenna.
Nice to meet you.
And Savannah Stewart from The Rover.
Hello. How you doing?
It's so good to have you guys here. Full disclosure, I produce The Breach podcast.
That's true.
And I took out a $10,000 loan from The Rover. Thank you guys for fronting that.
What did you spend the $10,000 on?
Oh, I'm saving it. I'm actually like accruing interest on
it. Oh, very cool. Yeah, you're investing it in data centers.
Yeah.
Strategic.
So let's talk about the work that you guys do with The Breach and with The Rover. Unrigged.ca is Canada's aggregation website for independent progressive journalism, and The Breach and The Rover are both on that, so as Canadians mentioned. And so let's start with the rover's new project, which is taking the rover from the page to video. And you guys launched this this summer, basically. But tell us a little bit about this week in the rover. What's it called?
It's called This Week is Rover.